Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, I want to start with something kind of fun today, and then I'm going to try to take it into a little bit different direction before we're done with the topic. You may have seen Georgia signee at the linebacker position, Mikhail MJ Sherman, on social media as of late. He was challenging Mason Smith, a very impressive defensive line prospect for the class of 2021. Corey Foreman, you know, arguably among the top players in the country, one-time Clemson commit. They flirted on social media with the idea of playing together in college, and Mikhail Sherman's on Twitter saying, why don't both you guys come do that here at the University of Georgia? This is the kind of thing that we see this time of year from time to time. And I think it's always fun. I don't know that Sherman on Twitter is going to be the missing ingredient to get a guy like that to come to UGA, or guys like that in this case between Smith and Foreman to come to UGA. But it's nonetheless fun to see no matter what. It's similar to some of the stuff you've seen with Amarius Mims as of late, maybe even Smile Munden as well. Georgia guys just kind of out there recruiting for their program. And I do think, as I said before, this is fun for fans, even if it's not all of that necessarily influential for where the guys ultimately make their decision. I think it's relationship with coaches that probably matter more to the players, although relationship with teammates is kind of cool there. But what I think that Georgia fans like about this, those that pay attention to this kind of thing on social media, I'll put a link to Sherman's tweet when I post the show later on at theworldfamousdognation.com. But what UGA fans like about this, and this is one of those moments where it's beneficial for me to be a fan, think like a fan, speak to you fan to fan. I think what we like about this is there's something nice about knowing that the players at Georgia like being at Georgia. I'm going to get into this more with Connor Riley, my Dog Nation teammate, when he joins us on the show a little bit later on today. Sometimes in sports, you see what appears to be a transactional relationship. A player is playing for a professional sports team for the paycheck and nothing else. A college player is a part of a program because it's a springboard to the pros and really nothing else. There are moments sometimes when it doesn't feel like there's much of a connection, as much of a bond between player and the team that he's playing for. But at Georgia, when it's different than that, it makes rooting for the team, I believe, more fun. And Sherman's example of this. We've seen a few of these kind of guys in recent Georgia recruiting classes. Sherman stands out from the 2020 class, who just seems to really like Georgia. And your fandom for Georgia is made more fun by a guy who seems to be really proud of his Georgia decision. In fact, for Sherman, this was true well before he actually made his official UGA pledge. Back when he was an open for business recruit on the 2020 cycle, it always seemed like he was leaning in Georgia's direction because of the complimentary things that he would say about Georgia throughout the process. And now as a Georgia signee, those compliments seem genuine and true, and he just seems really glad about being here. In fact, let me give you an example of that from Sherman talking to our Jeff Centel from the past.
I feel really good about Georgia and Coach Dan Lanning. I really mess with the coaching staff as a whole. Nick Williams, Dan Lanning, Kirby Smart, everybody. Because when I went down, it was a really great warm welcome, to be honest.
So listen, he says he got a warm welcome at Georgia, and he feels really good about the coaching staff. Mentioned some by names. I know there's some background noise there and that, but you can still, for the most part, hear what Sherman is saying. And as I said before, from a fan standpoint, when guys like that are happy with the choice they made, pushing other recruits to make the same choice, that's just kind of fun. It's kind of fun to be a part of. However, let me for a moment take this in a different direction. I've told you all before that I'm a little skeptical of what seems to be on its way to college football at some point in time, players being able to profit off their name, image, and likeness. Now, generally speaking, I'm in favor of free market situations where guys should not be restricted from making money if they sign an autograph or making money if they show up for a personal appearance. I'd love to live in a world where that is happening. I just think that seems fair to me, and I don't think it impacts the college experience of still trying to make it an amateur event any more than the Ryder Cup is made less significant because the players that are playing there aren't getting paid for the Ryder Cup, but are getting paid for the other things in their life. I don't think that college football is necessarily harmed by players getting paid, but over the course of time, I've told you all this before, I grow skeptical of the push for name, image, and likeness because of the people who are pushing it, not the players themselves. If a player himself wants to argue for why he ought to be able to profit off his own likeness, I'm absolutely willing to listen to that. But when other people usually media types are aggrieved on someone else's behalf, I just become untrusting of that, because some of the people I suspect don't have the most pure motives for wanting to bring this into college football. It seems to me sometimes they want to bring the chaos they think might come with this, because ultimately they'd love to topple the college football amateurism model. That's probably a different topic for a different day, but that's kind of my take on that. However, if we assume for a moment it's on its way to college football at some point in time, I think it becomes fun to say, well, who are the kinds of players most likely to be able to really cash in on that and profit from that? We can think of some examples in Georgia's past, but when you hear a guy like Sherman talking, I'm not saying that Sherman himself would be the guy to like make the most money off being able to make, you know, trade on his name, image, and likeness, but it's the kind of thing that Sherman brings to the table that I think fans ultimately like. It's not necessarily going to be the guy who's just the best player or the guy who's putting up the biggest stats. I think it's going to be the kind of guy that reinforces how much fun it is for the average fan to be a fan of Georgia. That's just kind of the thing that fans kind of like. And Sherman's way of saying that in the clip that I just played for you and some of the stuff that he does in social media is the example of the kinds of things that I think fans are going to really like and might make them more likely to buy a certain player's t-shirt or go out and get a certain player's autograph. That's the kind of thing that increases fandom and therefore increases players' chances to make some money off of that kind of thing. Also, beyond all of that, the attitude these players bring to the table, I think, is going to be what helps them in a sense in terms of their ability to profit. Not just how good they are, but how great they want to be and how hard they're willing to work at a place like Georgia to get there. Let me give you another example of that from Sherman's past, the kind of thing that's going to make him really popular. And by the way, we're entering an area in which popularity in college football may never be more important than it is right now. Here's more from Sherman.
Honestly, I'm not looking for nowhere to be a star. To be honest with you, like, being a star would be great, you know what I mean? I feel like I'd be a star anywhere I go. However, I need someone that can actually crack down on me and just make my abilities being a DN and an outside linebacker the best that I can be. That type of thing. And plus, coaching is what's going to make me the better person, the better football player. Because right now, I'm still raw. I haven't really cracked nowhere yet. My potential is still up there. I still haven't reached it yet. So I need somewhere that can really push me to that limit.
I mean, that's the message you just want to bottle up, right? And you want to just give that out to as many people as you can. And I think that kind of attitude makes Sherman an incredibly popular player about to come in at the University of Georgia. And pushing for other recruits to follow in that same path, I think, only kind of works to make him that much more popular. You know, if we are getting ready to enter into a new era in which players can profit off their name, image, likeness, attitudes like that, I think could prove to be pretty profitable. I don't know about you, but what you just heard from Sherman there makes me want to wear a Mecole Sherman t-shirt at some point in time, and I wouldn't mind seeing some of that money end up in his pocket for his troubles there. So it's all really fun. Obviously, Georgia's got a good thing going in recruiting right now. A lot of the players who are signing up for the program seem to be happy with their choice. They are pushing others to do the same thing, not just Sherman, but some of the other names that you've seen here as of late. And it certainly looks like Georgia's on its way to producing a pretty impressive class once again for the cycle of 2021. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily. We're the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, and we're really glad to have you with us. It's video in the morning at 10 a.m. on Facebook and YouTube. We'll be back on Twitter again very soon. Can't wait to have that be true. Also available as a podcast and on radio as well. Let me say one thing about our podcast radio audience. One of the things I'm noticing as I'm getting the show together for consumption on radio and podcast, so we're recording our interview on video now and bringing it to you here in the podcast and the radio, and we're doing it through one of these teleconference type technologies because we're all socially distant at the moment. And I'm noticing a little bit that the video audio, if that makes sense, the audio from the video is skipping just a little bit. I think it happened on my interview yesterday with Jeff Sintel. I think that's happening again today a little bit with Connor Riley. There is not a ton I can do about that because it's just being recorded that way on Facebook and YouTube. So I apologize for the slight inconvenience on that. I would say that 99% of what we've recorded for the last couple of days has been very, very decent quality, good content. Did notice a couple hiccups here and there, so my apologies to you on that. And my hope is that sooner rather than later, we're doing Dog Nation Daily again, back within the friendly confines of our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios. And I cannot wait to be doing that really soon. We're also going to be speaking of video, tonight on the Dog Nation video channels, fun return for Before the Hedges presented by Kroger. What a great, great program that's been with our Dog Nation recruiting insider, Jeff Sintel, as of late, as he's had a great lineup of guests, really just highlighting a lot of the upcoming members of the 2021 class, or at least targets for Georgia for that upcoming class. It's been great to hear from those guys with Jeff Sintel on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger. That continues tonight at 6 p.m. And by the way, speaking of our friends at Kroger, they are completely upgrading the shopping experience and taking great care of folks at a time in which we're thinking more about grocery shopping than ever before. During the coronavirus shutdown, when basically all of our food's coming from supermarkets right now, the work that Kroger's done to keep the store clean, to keep the shelf stocked, is really amazing. And now they take it to a new level, offering free customer pickup. You can order online, schedule for a time that's convenient for you, and then show up, and Kroger's going to carefully put your order together for you and bring it out there to you when your vehicle arrives. It's just another way that Kroger's taking great care of you right now. So check out the Kroger closest to you for a whole lot more on that. All right, let me say one thing before we get to continue on and roll on with the show here for a moment. So I'm kind of fascinated by this. If you look at ESPN FBI, the Football Power Index, that's some of the math stuff that ESPN does to project the upcoming season. And at one point in time, Georgia was actually fairly low on the FPI list. I think of the initial Football Power Index projection, Georgia was just 10th. In some recent re-tabulations, they've moved up to 5. Now, how in the world, on the basis of math, do you go from 10th to 5th when no games have been played, really nothing's changed over the course of an offseason? I don't know the answer to that. ESPN doesn't show its work on this very much. But now we are in a scenario where the ESPN FBI likes Georgia a pretty good bit. They project in the repeated simulations over and over again Georgia to average more than 10 wins for the upcoming season, projecting at like 10 point something whatever wins, knocking on the door of an 11-1 type season again, very similar to Alabama, who has the highest ESPN FBI projection, but not dramatically higher than Georgia. However, while the ESPN FPI apparently looks at Georgia and Alabama as similar teams, the gambling market has kind of taken a bit of a different tact. I'll give you, for instance, William Hill, a sports book based in Nevada, also, you know, London as well, but we're thinking about the Nevada version here for a moment, has updated odds to win the SEC. The overwhelming favorite to do that is Alabama right now. They are a minus favorite, which means that you would have to risk additional money to bet them to win the SEC, more likely to win it than not. In other words, Georgia is the next best team to win, but way different odds. Georgia's 4-1. Alabama's like minus 150 or minus 125. Georgia's, I forget the actual number for Alabama, but Georgia's 4-1. Quite different look in terms of the overall likelihood of winning the SEC. So what I take that to mean is, while mathematically Georgia and Alabama are viewed as being similar teams, the betting public putting its money where its mouth is, or the betting, the sports book, you know, managers, the guys who are setting the lines, don't quite yet view Georgia as a team ready to go to Tuscaloosa, win that game against Alabama. They still see Alabama as more likely to do that. Georgia, in a sense, is still viewed as a pretty big underdog to the Tide. By the way, the individual point spread for that game kind of bears it out the same way. Georgia at one point in time was about a 4-point underdog in that game. Most recently, a lot of the sports books who have posted a look-ahead line for that game have Georgia more like a 7-point underdog against Alabama. They are just viewed as an underdog against the Crimson Tide. But what's funny to me is, and I'm going to get more into this with Connor Riley in a moment, but what's funny to me is that Georgia, led by Kirby Smart, Smart himself, has never seemingly wanted to use that as a motivational ploy. Georgia is apparently an underdog to Alabama, but Georgia as a program doesn't like thinking of itself that way. As a podcast host, I was very influenced by Bill Simmons from ESPN. You may have grown up listening to Bill Simmons yourself when he first started his ESPN podcast a good number of years ago. And one of the things that Simmons was once famous for saying was that a real powerful motivator for a team can be the concept of nobody believes in us, that sometimes when you get a chance to be the nobody believes in this team, that becomes a real powerful motivator. And in Simmons' sense, he has said that he's seen teams go on to have success because of that. If that's true anywhere, it doesn't seem to be true in the SEC. Georgia, who could potentially sell itself as a team traveling to Tuscaloosa, ready to topple Alabama, having fallen short of doing that a couple of times in the last few years, doesn't seem to want to sell itself as an underdog. It's probably the right way to go about that, because I think it's the strength of your program that sells you as a recruiting powerhouse more so than anything else. And Georgia has leaned on that strength to build a big roster. And even though sports books in Nevada, online, wherever else, even though they may think of Georgia still as an underdog against the Crimson Tide, unlikely to win that game, Georgia itself doesn't seem to want to view itself that way. And Kirby Smart, he doesn't seem to want to have it that way either. We'll do more of this with Connor Riley here coming up in just a moment. Just kind of an interesting observation of the mental approach that Georgia takes with a big opponent like that looming on the schedule. So we'll do that. I'll also talk more about why this may be a bit of a breakout year for the Georgia wide receiving core. We'll do a lot of that coming up. It's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We'll say hello to Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily. Connor, I've got a lot I want to talk to you about, but let me begin with where I started. On the subject of signees like Sherman or players like MJ Sherman who put themselves out there on social media a little bit, you know, in this case, chasing down Foreman, chasing down Mason Smith, two very impressive members of the 2021 class. I don't know that he's going to sway anybody to come to Georgia the way a lot of these social media messages probably stop short of doing that. But, man, it sure is fun for the fans. And for Sherman, who I believe is already a fan favorite for folks that follow UGA recruiting, I think this just cements that status all the more for him.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting that you choose to lead with the pursuit of Foreman and Smith when yesterday you saw something similar with a lot of guys tweeting out and recruiting both Amarius Mims and Shamel Munden, you know, other five stars, but those guys aren't necessarily the top 10 that tickle your fancy. You know, it is interesting. I think in this era where Kirby Smart has gone on record and said he's worried about, you know, potentially coaches over-contacting kids and sort of wearing them down from that aspect, I do think it's pretty interesting. And this is sort of the Georgia, I mean, granted, I follow them more closely than I do other teams, but Georgia's sort of the first team where I've seen their players now sort of come out. And it's not just Mekel Sherman. It's Monty Rice, who won't even be here when some of these guys get to campus. Trayvon Walker. It's players that are really going out and making a public recruiting pitch to some of these players, you know, the Foreman, Smiths, Mims, Mundens of the world. And I do think that's a pretty interesting tactic to sort of see and get that out there, especially in a time when there's just so much we don't know when Foreman or Smith are ever going to be able to visit Georgia.
I've never tried to hide the fact that I come at this from the perspective of a fan. I root for Georgia. I want the best for Georgia. Frankly, Connor, I would probably root for UGA no matter who was wearing the uniform. But the names that you mentioned, chasing down guys like Mims and Mond and others, when the guys that are at Georgia seemingly are glad to be there, it makes the experience of being a fan all the more fun. We see some examples sometimes in sports, maybe it's in college sports, sometimes it may be professional sports, where the entire relationship between player and team seems to be transactional. You know, the team's using the player, the player's using the team, and when it's all said and done, everybody kind of goes about their business. When you get the sense at Georgia, even if it's just, you know, sometimes kind of the feel-good social media storyline, but when you get the sense at Georgia that it goes beyond the transactional relationship of I'm just here because this is the school that's going to get me to the league, or the team saying we just got the player because we think he's talented. When it goes beyond that, I think it makes the experience of being a fan all the more fun.
Yeah, I think you can look at, you know, that Philadelphia Eagles team that won a Super Bowl a few years ago, and everyone seemed to really enjoy being there and being on that team. And you contrast that, I think, with the New England Patriots, where a lot of people have come out and said, you know, it's not exactly the most fun atmosphere or environment out there. And it does, as a New England Patriots fan myself, sort of feel, as you say, transactional, though I will take six Super Bowl rings any day of the week over one. But yeah, I think to your larger point, I do think it helps that, you know, you have guys that like being there, that want to be there. I do find it interesting that the guys that are out there making those public commits. Now, granted, Smith and Foreman are defensive players, so it does make more sense for defensive players to come out there and sort of say that. It is interesting that I haven't seen any offensive current members of that 20 of this Georgia football team sort of come out and do what Rice and Walker and Malik Herring were sort of doing yesterday. But overall, I definitely think there's a sense there from Georgia players that there's a want and desire to like to be at Georgia right now.
All right, let me talk about something else for a moment. And I don't really have like a very, like, this is not a take, this is sort of an observation. So if you look at the current ESPN FBI, I think Alabama is at the top of the SEC in terms of projected wins, somewhere near 11. In the repeated simulations that the FBI is going to base on, Georgia on average has more than 10 wins for the upcoming season. So, you know, Georgia and Alabama are within, you know, margin of error in terms of what the expected outcome in terms of overall wins the upcoming season is. However, if you look at, like, say, William Hill, which has recently re-released its SEC championship odds to win the conference, Alabama's a minus favorite here, more likely to win it than not, minus 125 if memory serves. Georgia's like 4-1, so a plus money underdog in comparison to Alabama. I think it's very interesting that even though the overall end of season outcome in terms of records for these two teams are similar, folks like William Hill, the sportsbook, putting its money where its mouth is, still projects Alabama as the by far away more likely conference winner, which I extrapolate to mean it sounds like a lot of these folks don't think that Georgia's ready to beat Alabama as of yet, meaning Georgia's an underdog here. However, to sort of give you a chance to talk, Connor, I think it's interesting that even though Georgia is perceived as an underdog in comparison to Alabama, that's not really the way that Kirby Smart chooses to sell this program. Georgia doesn't seem to want to kind of lean on the nobody believes in us card the way that some folks around sports occasionally like to do. What do you make of that? Is that a mindset that you think that Georgia ought to employ more going into Tuscaloosa? No one's giving us a chance to win this game. Only the guys in this locker room believe in ourselves the way that we've seen other sports teams use as a cliche. What's the right mindset playing Alabama in September?
Absolutely not. I am a big believer in that you are part of the reason I sort of dislike the way Baker Mayfield carries himself is, you know, he preaches, oh, I'm this underdog, nobody wanted me. But he was a Heisman Trophy winner. He was a starting quarterback at Oklahoma, and he was the number one overall pick. Like, it's hard to sell yourself as an underdog when you're waking up in silk pajamas every morning. And while, yes, Georgia has not beaten Alabama, and in the eyes of the public, you know, they may not be seen on the same level, Georgia's recruited at a higher level than Alabama has in the last three recruiting cycles. When they played on the field, Georgia was leading in the fourth quarter in both of those games. And if, you know, the ball bounces a few different ways, if there's a referee call that goes another way, maybe Georgia wins those two games. I don't think that Georgia needs to play itself up as an underdog against Alabama. I think if anything, it needs to carry itself, say, hey, as an equal or as a team that is possibly even better than Alabama, and go in there with the confidence that winning that game, while yes, it will be a big deal, it shouldn't be a big deal to the guys on that team, because they are every bit as talented on paper as this Alabama team is.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think case in point on all of this, when LSU beat Alabama last year, the post game locker room celebration, which we all became aware of because of a streaming video from inside the locker room, it wasn't Ed Orgeron saying, hey, all these years, nobody thought we could beat Alabama, we finally went out and showed people we're capable of doing this. No, he took the tact that you're describing of saying, this win proves as a program we're stronger than Alabama. Mm-hmm. We're going to start taking the recruits that they want. We're going to keep doing these kinds of things. It's kind of funny, that whole underdog mentality, which does seem to help some teams in some cases in sports, it seems like SEC teams are relatively allergic to that. I think that Georgia's tact on this is exactly as you've described, and I think that LSU, who did go out there and prove a lot of critics wrong a year ago, simply chose not to focus on that and simply chose to celebrate that win as if it proved what I think as Orgeron privately believed, that as a program they were stronger than Alabama to begin with.
Right. You think of like a program like Texas A&M, who had that win over Alabama in, I guess, 2012, and the sort of way they celebrated it, it was this massive accomplishment, this underdog sort of mentality. And then you look how that program sputters out there shortly afterwards. I think even you're seeing it with a team like Clemson now. Clemson can no longer play this little Clemson underdog card.
That's right.
And that shtick is wearing thin very, very quick if it hasn't already. And Clemson is sort of having to rebrand itself on the fly, whereas Georgia does beat Alabama, and they do, you know, sort of go on this run that they've been seeming like they're going to go on for a while. It's not going to be that, so it's not going to be such a difficult thing to deal with these sort of expectations of being a favorite every Saturday, because they've largely been dealing with that and see themselves as that over these past couple of seasons.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think that Clemson's probably been more likely to sell itself as an underdog, because the alternative is kind of an ACC bully picking on teams that aren't, you know, able to provide a fair fight. So from a narrative standpoint, that probably makes more sense for Dabo to try to push. By the way, speaking of narratives, one of the narratives you may have seen growing out there is the way in which the University of Georgia is really stepping up to battle the coronavirus. Our society is confronting this, and our great flagship universities are leading the way in that competition. And no one doing more than what UGA is right now. And our friends at the UGA Alumni Association are encouraging you, inviting you to be a part of this. And there are a few ways you can do this. I want to make sure you're aware of all of that. For students who found themselves displaced recently, not on campus, maybe back home, dealing with uncertain situations, the Student Emergency Fund can step up and provide a lot of relief for them as they deal with that. When you financially support that Student Emergency Fund, you enable the Georgia students out there who could be in harm's way to get that little bit of support necessary that could maybe keep them in school and keep them on track towards a degree. And obviously, you know how much that benefits the world once those folks get out of school. You can also support the ongoing research that's taking place at UGA to work on therapeutics and potential vaccines for the COVID-19 virus. Your financial support makes it more likely that takes place. Also, for UGA soon-to-be grads, they're entering into an uncertain job market. Your mentorship, you can actually sign up to the UGA Alumni Association to be an official mentor to a UGA student to make that transition from college life to professional life easier. Your expertise, your learned experience is invaluable in that regard. You can do that for the next generation of UGA grads. And by the way, so many of you are on the front lines in your own personal battle against the coronavirus and COVID-19. We'd love to hear your story. So when you go to this website, a very good way to kind of get involved and be involved in all this, alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. Of course, on the video, easy to read, but let me read it one more time for the folks listening on radio and podcast, alumni.uga.edu/COVID-19. Be a part of the great work the UGA Alumni Association is doing supporting the university as it continues to be at the forefront of our confrontation with the coronavirus. Connor, let me get back to football here. And I'm going to talk about UGA assistant here for a moment that I don't think gets as much attention as some others do. But I think the next couple of years could sort of really do some work to put this as a coaching name star on the rise. It's actually wide receivers coach Cortez Hankton. I played some audio on our podcast yesterday of Hankton recently shared by UGA, fun, motivational type stuff. And it kind of got me thinking more about Hankton in terms of the role that he's had in bringing in some of the wide receivers to Georgia. You know, we've had recruiting experts on our show before that cited his relationship longstanding with George Pickens. Even during the time that Pickens was an Auburn commit, Hankton was sort of an ever-present part of Pickens' life, which made the opportunity to flip to Georgia easier for Pickens to do. We've also heard from many members of the 2020 class that Hankton was an influential figure with them there as well. I think over the course the next couple of years, with a changeover in offensive coordinator, with better overall talent at the position group, I think you're about to see much better play from the Georgia wide receiver core. More play like what Pickens brought to the forefront last year, and I guess Dominic Blaylock too. And as that happens, I think that Hankton, who kind of gets lost in the shuffle of bigger personalities, more well-known names amongst the Georgia assistant core, I think Hankton may be an assistant coach over the next couple of seasons that we're getting ready to hear a lot more about. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people point to the issues at the wide receiver position, and I think the reason those issues existed was because you look at the guy who's in charge of recruiting the wide receiver spot under those first couple of Kirby Smart seasons. That was James Coley. And then, you know, since Cortez Hankton has come in, you know, he lands Pickens, he lands Blaylock, though anyone, I could have landed Dominic Blaylock.
Sure.
And then he goes out, this class brings in three top 100 receivers along with Ladd McConkey and Justin Robinson. And he's shown that he's able to bring in a higher quality set of wide receivers than Georgia had traditionally been doing, both at the end of the Mark Richt era and even the start of the Kirby Smart era. So he's clearly got things going in the right direction. George Pickens pretty clearly got better over the course of the last season. I think you could say the same for Dominic Blaylock as well. So it's clear he's a talented coach. And the guy who I think, you know, he might end up becoming like is Del McGee, in the sense that, you know, there might not necessarily be like a straightforward path of him jumping straight to offensive coordinator. But if he's a guy that Georgia can sort of keep around for a little bit longer, then maybe he should be, because Del McGee by now, absolutely, I think should be a college head coach somewhere. He just, you know, I don't know why schools haven't given him that opportunity, but he's a guy who's regarded not just as one of the best, you know, position coaches at his position in the country, but potentially long-term, one of the best just assistant coaches in the country. And I think Hankton, the more time he spends here, the more he sort of helps himself, continues to develop the likes of Rosemy, Arian Smith, Jermaine Burton, potentially landing a guy like Deon Colsey in this 2021 recruiting class. His sort of pedigree is only going to continue to grow.
Yeah, I think the comparison to McKee is an interesting one because it's a guy like Dell who ultimately I think sucks a lot of the air out of the room that makes it hard for Cortez Hankton to become a well-known assistant coach. I mean, amongst Georgia fans here, because for such a long time, the caliber of running back that Georgia was bringing into the program was so different from the caliber of wide receiver that was bringing in. But as of the last couple of cycles, and part of this has been because it's been a huge need, but over the course of the last couple of recruiting cycles, that hasn't been quite the case as much as we're used to. And a lot of those guys, Pickens included, have kind of cited Hankton as one of the reasons we're here. And as that talent gets better, produces on the field, I think wide receivers are going to be a much bigger part of the story for Georgia on the field this season. I think it gives a chance to Hankton to be as well-known as some of his counterparts, McGee included. This has been a Sam Pittman team for a while. Matt Luke, because he's been an SEC head coach, also brings a level of renown to the situation. But I think Hankton may get a chance to share some of that spotlight this season.
Right, and I think I mentioned, you know, Todd Hartley on a sort of similar track there as well of these guys who, you know, they're pretty young, but they're both relatively on the young side. Hankton, I think a thing that shouldn't be overlooked with him, you know, he did play in the NFL. And he's got a lot of strong ties to that Louisiana area, an area that's been very good to Georgia in recent seasons. He's able to show that while, yes, he's a great, you know, great wide receivers coach, he can go into a lot of different homes across this country and sort of bring in and sell talented recruits. And I think, you know, again, as he gets more established here, as he becomes a more well-known name, because I just don't think a lot of people, oh, Cortez Hankton, oh, he's a wide receivers coach. They sort of overlook that when Georgia first hired him after, I believe, the 2017 season. I think as he gets more established and as the Georgia wide receivers continue to get better, which I fully believe they will under Hankton in this offense, that's only going to raise Hankton's caliber and sort of prestige. And then if he's landing guys like Deon Colsey every single year and sort of stacking those wide receivers on top of each other like McGee has done with the running back room, that's just going to continue to increase his sort of well-knownness to the Georgia fan base.
I want to try to do two things before we're done, both based on things you've recently published at DogNation.com. The phrase an invested and forget it player, because Rosemy could likewise be one of those guys that you just trust to do a job from day one. It's a pretty big compliment coming Rosemy's way. I don't care.
Yeah, I think the thing that I was going for there is, you know, with Thomas coming in, and you know, Thomas was not the five-star recruit, superstar, number one player at his position. I believe he was like the seventh or eighth highest-rated offensive tackle in that recruiting class, but he was a guy who came from a strong background, had, you know, capable measurables, but he was not the freak that Isaiah Wilson was. And he was just a guy coming in, you knew what he was going to be. You knew he had an incredibly high floor. He probably had the highest floor of anyone in that 2017 signing class. And I think, you know, Marcus Roseman, you look at him, comes from one of the best high school programs in the country in St. Thomas Aquinas. You look at his game style, yeah, he's not the burner that Arian Smith or even Jermaine Burton is. But seeing him in Orlando and watching some of his film, it's clear he knows how to win in tight spaces. He knows how to get open and get open sort of against the best competition. And I think that's something that Georgia sort of needs out of a second, not with George Pickens being the number one guy and Dominic Blaylock being out of the slot. Georgia needs another guy to sort of emerge on that other outside wide receiver spot. And I think in this 2020 recruiting class, which finished number one in the country, I think of all the guys Georgia's bringing in, when you factor in Roseme's pedigree, I think he's got the highest floor. And I think that's sort of where I draw the comparisons to Thomas in that, you know, Thomas was not the best offensive lineman on that 2017 Georgia team. That was Isaiah Wynn. He probably wasn't even the second best. I'd probably maybe give that to Lamont Galliard, but he was still a valuable piece and a valuable contributor to that Georgia team. And I think Roseme can sort of fill that sort of same role and then eventually grow into a bigger one over time.
All right. Last thing for me, and I find myself having to sort of bang this drum more often than I want to, but you've got a piece up looking at Georgia's current relationship with a lot of its rivals. A lot of this is based on current recruiting, and goodness knows we've done the Tennessee topic enough this week. However, the one thing I keep coming back to, even though they're not necessarily wowing you on the recruiting trail right now, it's amazing to me how little attention Auburn gets in comparison to whatever chatter is generated about Florida, whatever chatter is currently being generated about Tennessee. In terms of being an on-field threat, I still view Auburn as way more of an on-field threat to Georgia than I view Florida, than I view Tennessee. In other words, even though the game's in Athens, Georgia's more likely to lose to Auburn this season than it is to lose to Florida. I'm not saying Georgia's likely to lose to Auburn, but the scarier game for me is still Auburn. And by the way, this came up in our video chat yesterday. Even if Georgia beats Alabama, that doesn't make the Auburn game a couple of weeks later any easier to win. Georgia's only about a 4.5-point favorite right now on the basis of some of the look-ahead lines that are out there. That's probably lower than some people realize who haven't been following it closely. It's amazing to me how little attention Auburn gets compared to some of the other teams in the SEC when the on-field results suggest the opposite should be true.
Yeah, it's funny. When I was doing that sort of video chat Monday night and I was going through those teams, I just completely blanked and forgot Auburn at first. I jumped around and got to them at the end eventually. But I think the reason people forget or they don't really, you know, talk a whole lot about Auburn in the offseason, and friend of the program Barrett Salee brings this up a lot, every year it's the same thing with Auburn. It's the same issues on that offensive side of the ball. Is Gus going to really, you know, loosen the reins on the offense, and is he going to let, you know, his offensive coordinator do that job, or is he ultimately just going to take the steering wheel back and say, I'm going to do this? We know at some point this year an Auburn running back is going to get hurt, probably by the time around the Georgia game happens, and that's really going to, you know, hurt their offense. Now, you know, Chad Morris bringing in an exciting offensive coordinator, I was never really all that wowed or amazed by him, even dating back to his time at SMU. So I'm probably a little bit lower on that hire. And Bo Nix did not exactly play how you would want a five-star quarterback to play last season all the time. But, you know, the pieces are there. It's just with Auburn, and I think the reason some people are overlooking them this offseason and offseasons in general is that they're never going to have that super recruiting class that gives, you know, people reason to think, oh, they might be on the come up. And we know what Gus Malzahn is as a head coach now, and we know they're going to lose a game or two early in the season. You know, well, fortunately for them, they play LSU and Alabama at the end of the season. But, you know, if they lose an early game, it's going to be, you know, oh, Gus is going to have to make changes to the offense. He's going to have to take play calling duties away from Chad Morris. And it's just going to be the same old song and dance that it always seems to be at Auburn.
Yeah, we'll watch that and see how that develops this upcoming season. Connor, good stuff from you. Thanks for being here and being part of Dog Nation Daily here today. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you at dognation.com and talking to you on our program again very soon as well.
Yep, thanks for having me on, B.A. Good to see you guys.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good to have Connor Riley here today on Dog Nation Daily. We got more SEC topics coming up here in a moment as part of our SEC Through. Before that, let me remind you, we are on video every morning at 10 a.m., Facebook and YouTube for now. Coming back again soon on Twitter very soon. Man, I cannot wait for that. But for now, you can join us. We'll take your comments as part of our R.S. Andrews cooldown. R.S. Andrews is famous for taking care of your air conditioning, your heating, your plumbing, your electric needs. They are great at that. They can do all of that work for you, especially right now. You're thinking about air conditioning being on. It's been hot lately. Air conditioning's working overdrive. They're about to be on every single day because you know how hot it's about to be. If you're concerned yours may not be able to make it through the long, hot weather season to come, well, get some peace of mind by getting your system tuned back up to factory fresh specs. My friends at R.S. Andrews can take care of that for you. Very reasonable price. You got to find them online, though, at rsandrews.com. The big story in the SEC here today is kind of an interesting back and forth between Texas and Texas A&M. Obviously, the new athletic director at A&M is Ross Bjork, most recently of Ole Miss. Chris Conte is the athletic director at Texas. Bjork has said that he thinks the ship has sailed in terms of A&M and Texas scheduling each other anytime soon. However, Del Conte, the Texas athletic director, has said that he thinks these two programs ought to be playing each other, which I guess I probably kind of agree. There is some real live animosity. This is a real rivalry here between these two programs. It would be incredibly entertaining to see them back on the field here again together. It is worth pointing out, though, that there's been a lot of, like, back and forth on this over the years of who was ever the athletic director at the time at both the places. Sometimes they want to do it, sometimes they don't. You know, this is one of the most frustrating passive-aggressive relationships I think you'll see it anywhere in college athletics. And frankly, I'd love to take the side of A&M here against, you know, the out-of-SEC foe Texas, but the truth is, over the years, the A&M behavior in this, Ross Bjork has only just recently arrived on the scene, so you can't really say much about him in this, but the behavior of A&M has been just as bad as Texas. You know, the SEC has great influence on how its non-college football playoff New Year's Six bowls are scheduled. They have some power, some influence over that. There's been long assumptions over the years that Texas and Texas A&M had a chance to be matched up against each other in a bowl, and somehow A&M convinced the SEC not to do that. That's the rumor and innuendo that's out there, and I guess you can believe that or not, but over the years, I don't know that A&M has behaved on this any better, frankly, than Texas has. I'd like to see these two teams playing again, but if they're not, it ought to serve as a reminder to a program like Georgia that history alone isn't enough to dictate what must be done. We've seen even some of Georgia's traditions evolve. Used to always play the Deep South's oldest rivalry in November. Now Georgia and Auburn to play in October. So Georgia ought to view itself as having the freedom to alter its rivals to the rivalry games to the extent that it wants to benefit itself. Now, I'm a believer that for now, the cocktail party ought to remain in Jacksonville, but I've also acknowledged that ought to be open for debate, and the majority of Georgia fans ought to weigh in and view that. Tech at the end of the season, as opposed to maybe a better non-conference game with more exposure, more national attention, that's something that I think that Georgia ought to consider as well. Texas and Texas A&M probably should play. But if they're going to exercise their right not to play, then some other programs ought to maybe ask some questions of their own scheduling philosophy at the moment, maybe Georgia included. Don't always do a ton of basketball on here, but I will mention this. Did you see where Romello White, a big man from the Arizona State program, a guy that played very well against Georgia when the Dawgs played the Sun Devils during the basketball season, he is going to be on the open market as a graduate transfer. Jeff Goodman reporting a bunch of SEC teams involved on this. I guess some of the online chatter I'm hearing here has him connected to Vanderbilt, maybe. That may be the place that he's heading, but nonetheless, for the moment, White is on the open market. It may be some interest there with Georgia. Certainly Georgia could use a big man. We'll follow that and see where that goes, and for now, we'll make that your SEC through. I'll also mention one more thing as we're wrapping up the show here. Will Shipley, the five-star running back, has chosen Clemson. This is not unexpected. I think I even mentioned this to Jeff Sintel yesterday. It was looking like that's what Shipley was going to do. I guess maybe even a bigger blow for Notre Dame, because it seems like the Irish should try to get involved on this. But Shipley, kind of an interesting player, a versatile running back, a guy who can be used a lot of different ways for obvious reasons. We'll draw some comparisons to Christian McCaffrey from the Carolina Panthers. But, you know, Shipley's a legit prospect here, and Clemson's gotten itself an interesting running back prospect for the class of 2021. Georgia's obviously still got plenty of targets out there as well. Whether you think about, you know, Donovan Edwards or L.J. Johnson or whoever else to pair along with its own interesting running back right now, Lavoisier Carroll. We'll continue to follow how the Dawgs go in that regard. By the way, Gator Hater Updater, good Georgia fans, we believe are Gator haters. It's been 1,285 days since Florida's beaten Georgia. That's good news. And we'll see you back here again tomorrow for Dawg Nation Daily.